Good afternoon, everybody.
Call this thing to order and jump straight into public comment if we can.
Now we're looking good.
There's public behind me, so I'm assuming somebody wanted to say something.
So maybe from here
or wherever you'd like to be.
Well, I can talk big enough. I used to be an industrial trainer, and I used to talk to employees who worked in paper mills for 30, 40 years. I can talk bigger. My name is Wilson Katie. Am I supposed to give address, et cetera, or?
What's that?
Could you say your name? Wilson.
Katie, C-A-D-Y.
No need for the address. I'll look.
I am not a resident of Cole County. I am a Sweeney County resident. But I'm here as a board member of Vancouver Audubon, speaking on behalf of our 877 members, the majority of them who do live in Clark County. I'm here speaking about the proposed Frenchman's Bar disc golf course, something that we oppose. And we oppose it as an incompatible use of an area used by walkers, runners, and wildlife observation. Our chapter is only one of the 25 chapters in Washington State, and there are 5,000 chapters nationwide, and we have 500,000 members nationwide. The Portland chapter alone has 13,000 members, and this plan affects the birds that are utilize both sides of the river and the birders that utilize both sides of the river. But there are many more wildlife observers than Audubon members. Audubon is a minor number of the observation people. And I want to read this information. It comes from your own 2015 Parks Department comprehensive plan. Participation rates by activity, page 61. Walking, picnicking, bicycling, and wildlife observation were the top four activities. Wildlife observation was at 58.6%, and frisbee golf combined was at 17.5% participation. Frisbee golf on its own is only 4.5% participation, according to old studies. The National Survey on Recreation and Environment 2012, which is on page 70 of the report, says nature-based activities, those associated with wildlife and natural settings, showed a discernible growth in the number of people, an increase of 3.1% participation rate, and the number of days of participation. Americans' participation in nature-based outdoor recreation is increased in viewing, photographing, and otherwise observing nature, clearly measured as the fastest growing type of nature-based activity. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Outdoor Recreation Studies show wildlife observation to be the second most popular outdoor activity in the United States, next to gardening, with as many participants in Washington State as hunters and fishers combined. That's 1.9 million wildlife observers in Washington State, and out of those, 284,000 people are out-of-state visitors. According to the 2015 economic analysis of outdoor recreation in Washington State, outdoor recreation generates $21.6 billion in sales in Washington State per year, with $1 to $2.5 billion in Clark County alone. The study states that wildlife viewing and photography is a top outdoor activity and generates over $7 billion per year for the state economy. Now, how do people find out about Vancouver Lake Lowlands if they're a wildlife observer? Well, there are many, many websites, but there's also a lot of books on it. This is the third printing of the Washington Birders Guide to Washington State. There's a whole chapter here on Vancouver Lake Lowlands and mentions Frenchman's Bar Park. This is published by the Washington Ornithological Society and the American Birding Association. It's sold nationwide. It actually ran out of copies on the first printing, and the second printing had to be done. This is a guide to bird finding in Washington. This is the 1981 version of it. There have been three printings of this one here. There's a wildlife viewing guide to Washington State. These all mention Vancouver Lake and Frenchman's Bar. There's a Washington State birding trail map produced by National Audubon, available at visitor centers all across the state and by mail. This, we send these out to visitors who request information on where to go birding to Washington State. The Vancouver Lake Lowlands and Frenchman's Bar are featured here. There are a lot of other people that we use, including all those walkers and hikers who end up trail runners who enjoy seeing wildlife while they're out there. But why the Vancouver Lakelands? What's Lowlands? What's so special about it? Well, this description in part is from the 2000 park plan. Migratory Species and Supporting Habitats, page 25. The lower Columbia's floodplain and wetland areas are highly important for migrating and wintering waterfowl, neotropical migrants, and shorebirds. These areas support the second largest wintering and migration populations of waterfowl on the Pacific Northwest coast, the first being in the northern bays of Puget Sound. Peak waterfowl numbers exceed 200,000 birds during migration, and the area regularly winters over 150,000 ducks, geese, and swans. The protected riparian communities of lower Columbia River ecoregion provide excellent habitat for a mixed assemblage of neotropical migrant bird species. Although several species are transients, the lower Columbia also supports one of the richest nesting neotropical bird communities in the Pacific Northwest. 26 species of land birds utilize the forest for nesting, including several declining species in the Pacific Northwest. Although several of these species are not listed by the Parkinson's Flight Program or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, most are listed as threat for species of concern in Washington, Oregon, Wilson, and California.
Wilson, you start to go a bit long. We generally hold it to 3 minutes, so
okay.
If you could wrap up.
Basically, the Lowlands is an important bird area, recognized by National Audubon and BirdLife International. There are 2,500 of these bird areas in the United States. Vancouver Lake Lowlands is number 293 that was designated. The entire lowlands of the are a Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife priority species area, and they're also shown that in the Clark County Comprehensive Plan. And under the federal and state threatened endangered species listing, the creatures that are used in that area include the Columbian white-tailed deer, white-breasted nuthatch, and sandhill crane. Also, a great blue heron rookery across the street from the park, and a bald eagle nest on the site in the planned forest area. Last Monday, during a walkthrough of the proposed site with Mr. Bajerky, we found multiple slender-billed white-breasted nuthatch, a state and federally threatened species. And now I'm going to read from the Clark County Habitat Wetlands Protection Ordinance. Priority species point sites are defined as areas within 1,000 feet of mapped individual point sites where there are reported observations, threatened, endangered, or sensitive species. And I'm going to conclude by saying that the 50% of the population of Clark County, the United States, and Washington participate in wildlife movement has very little in the way of park facilities or expenditures. We just ask that critical wildlife habitat and endangered species be protected, and that Parks Department follow the County Comprehensive Plan, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Priorities Habitat Designation, and the Endangered Species Act. We will oppose any sport complexes or other activities in the Vancouver Lake Lowlands that are not compatible with the priority habitat designation.
Wilson, it looks like you have a very factual report there that you created. Is it possible you could send? Oh, thank you.
Anybody else want to
go? I'll take one, Wilson, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So Wilson, I'm very pleased that you showed up. And I have to say that when this came before the board, what, a year ago?
About a year ago.
It frankly never hit me that there might be a wildlife issue with it. So you're raising something that, you know, frankly just wasn't on my radar screen. My question on it, and very much this is, my question is, if we've already got all the other recreation activities down at Frenchman's Bar, why is this one particularly bad?
The other activities at Frenchman's Bar are all tied to the habitat there. Access to the river, fishing, playing on the beach, trails going through the woods. There are no large groups of people coming out into the habitat itself.
Okay.
And this force goes into areas that you go to the Department of Fish and Wildlife priority habitat page. You can actually click on the map and see what each part of the park is designated at and what species are there and what type of habitat and what issues are there. Our issue is the large number of people being brought into an area to do something that has nothing to do with the priority habitat itself. All you're looking for is an empty spot to put a playground in. And it isn't an empty spot. It's a critical wildlife habitat area. 100,000 people a year visit the Ridgefield Wildlife Refuge. That's a lot of people. And they also come down to Vancouver Lake because it's continuation of that same habitat. We're talking about millions of dollars that are coming into the economy, billions, according to your own report, that funds Clark County. And like I said, we, the wildlife observation people, photographers, we don't ask for a whole lot. How many Clark County provided photo blinds are there in any of our park systems? Observation blinds? None?
We have. We have two out at the center bottoms.
Okay, what?
That's the two that we basically oversee. But I'm not sure if there are others in other jurisdictions.
Considering we're talking about a group that's 50% participation in the county, we're one of the lowest representative facilities. And all we ask is that the existing habitat out there not be destroyed or impacted.
And I'm sure you guys already talked about this, but is there a way around it? Can we limit the times of access, or can we shift it, you know, up or down, north or south a little bit, or anything like that?
Well, according to the Clark County Comprehensive Plan, that there shouldn't be that type of activity more than 1,000 feet of a endangered species. Find a spot in the park there where you're farther than 1,000 feet from an endangered species. Won't do it. The activities you're asking about seasonally, it's a nesting breeding area during the summer. It's a wintering area for the largest concentration of waterfowl in southern Washington. And it also the surrounding area is habitat for the feeding sandhill cranes. These federally protected dusky Canada goose and the largest population of the cackling Canada goose on the Pacific Flyway. So what we're talking about is a major critical wildlife area, and you're talking about putting something in there that has nothing to do with the area there at all. You're not utilizing it, the people are not there to enjoy the wildlife or what is already there. It's like going to Mount Hood and putting in a bowling alley instead of another ski run.
I think we got the message there.
Okay.
We really did. And we appreciate hearing it.
Thank you. Thank you, Wilson.
Hi, I'm Bob Forrest.
That's okay.
Although I'm a member of Vancouver, I'm not a board member. I signed up as a citizen. And I think I want to help you answer some of your questions, John. And what I really wanted to talk about was the habitat. And you have several of the holes, if I can call it. I'm not real sure of the terminology. Several of the holes are in what we call riverine riparian habitats. And it's a habitat that used to be pretty extensive. in the western states along the major rivers. In this case, we're talking about the Columbia. And today, there's just a fraction. Matter of fact, it's a fraction of a fraction left. And so they become very important. They become very, very important for migrating species of birds. Now, we're not talking about the waterfowl type of birds here. A lot of people think about the geese and all that. Wilson was on a bigger picture. What I'm concentrating on is that riparian. Okay, and what's really important for that area are the little birds. What we call the dicky birds, you might call them the brown gobs, whatever you want to call them. But that's what's important for protecting that area. Riparian areas, especially riverine riparian areas, basically are good when they're in whole context, big, large chunks of land. And what you're proposing is you're proposing to come in and basically cut it up into smaller chunks. And you can get away with that to a certain extent, but eventually what you're going to get to is a tipping point to where that riparian habitat is no longer going to be good for some of the species that need large acreages of riparian habitat. Okay? Slender-billed nuthatch happens to be one of those. Billy-eyed woodpecker, another. They're all there. Also, Columbian white-tailed deer, you have them. I have pictures of Columbian white-tailed deer on your property. Okay, with fawns. You had one, had two fawns last year. So this is an important area that is pretty critical to the birds, but it's also pretty critical to somebody like me who wants to enjoy my county. I'll tell you why. It's because it attracts the birds, it attracts me. I go bird watching. I'm a bird, okay? And so finding birds migrating, they usually migrate along rivers. This is a highway. The riparian habitat is the gas station. That's where they go to fill up. The motel, where they go to sleep and rest on their migration. I go and find them. There are only two chunks of riparian habitat owned by the public in Clark County. This is one. The other one does also manage. And that's over at James Kiffin, James Clark.
Captain William Clark.
Captain, thank you. Those are two. So what you're proposing to do is you're proposing to take one of those away and leave it with one. Because that's what this proposal will do. This proposal will essentially remove birds out of an area that we historically have always used. We're not a noisy bunch, but we do when we start seeing them getting threatened, and that's what's going on here. And so, speed it up, he says. Okay, I will. Bottom line is, I wonder how many disc golf courses there are in the county.
None owned by Clark County. There are probably three that I know of. One is in the city, one is at WSU, there's one at a church.
So essentially there's more of those and there aren't places for us to go birding on riverine riparian areas in the county. That's the bottom line. So my objection is your proposal of going into that riparian area and slicing it up and essentially degrading the habitat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Setterberg. I'm a resident of Richfield. I'm on the Vancouver Audubon Board as Vice President. I'm also a volunteer at Richfield National Wildlife Refuge. And I'm there usually on Sunday afternoons. I just want to emphasize another point, and I agree with everything that Wilson and Bob said about the criticality of this particular habitat. But last Sunday, I had over 230 visitors at the refuge, and I had somewhere around 80 carloads of people, of those 230 refuge visitors. They often ask me about certain species of birds and where to see them, and I frequently refer them down to Vancouver Lowlands and Frenchman's Bar, because I know there's some things you can see there that you're not going to easily see up on the upper end of the where the refuge is above it. As Bob just said, it's a continuous area. There's lots of important habitat, but there's certain sections where you can only see different species. And the point I want to make, that was Sunday afternoon, 230 visitors in my 5 hours that I was there. Those people are going through Clark County. About 35 to 40% come up from Oregon. They're looking for places to eat. I refer them into Vancouver and some of the places to eat there. A couple in Ridgefield, but we're in Vancouver. So they're also coming up here, they're recreating and they're spending money. And I think that's an important idea to think about. That's a lot of people coming to our parks to see these wonderful birds. That's all I have.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Owen. I'm a volunteer for Clark County Parks for the last 2 years. I've been a Trail County volunteer, and I also was directly involved in preparing the pre-application to the City of Vancouver for this disc golf park. I'm a resident of Clark County. I live in the East Orchards area. So I wanted to speak about the park in terms of, as a component of the proposal for this golf park, I want to speak out in terms of the aspects of this as a regional park. Frenchman's Bar currently falls under the definition of a regional park, and I have a couple of excerpts here that I want to read from the pre-app that we submitted to the city. Regional parks are recreational areas that serve residents throughout the county. Paraphrasing here just a little bit, but regional parks are usually more than 50 acres in size, and they have facilities that may include sports fields, extensive trail systems, or large picnic areas. In addition, regional parks often include passive recreation space and unique features such as significant natural areas or access to lakes and rivers. That's from Clark County Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan. So certainly the current park there fulfills some of those line items. For instance, there is a picnic shelter there. People access that shelter there because there's a parking lot. Bathrooms for public restrooms there, so it makes it easily accessible for a full day of enjoyment of the outdoors. There's also volleyball courts there as well, on the beach. Something that is kind of unique, I think, to Clark County. You don't see with the access that we have in the river here that you actually have volleyball courts right in the river. I think it's a great way to enjoy the game and a great way to get out and enjoy the area. There's also, in accordance to the City of Vancouver Shoreline Master Plan, there's also some wording here that I think is pertinent. The Master Plan says that for public access and recreational policy, increase and diversify recreational opportunities by promoting the continued public acquisition of appropriate shoreline areas for public use and develop recreational facilities that so that they are distributed throughout the community to foster convenient access. And locate public access and recreational facilities in a manner that encourages variety, accessibility, and connectivity in a manner that will preserve the natural characteristics and functions of the shoreline. And I think disc golf park as a recreation activity, very low impact activity. We're talking about throwing frisbees in mostly an open space over a couple hundred yard area. We're not talking about playing touch football here or anything like that. Pretty low impact when it comes to the impact of throwing a frisbee into trees and bushes and things of that nature. It's an expansion of an existing use, I believe. It's already used as a picnic area. There are already sports going on in that area. And it seems to me that there's a way through this process, since we've submitted the pre-app, to figure out a way to use this as an additional use fulfilling. Fulfilling the wording of the master plans here as a park, and also being able to get people out and enjoy some of the natural habitat out there. And there is, you know, natural habitat out there that's really neat to see. It's not just about birds, though. It's about trees. It's about birds. It's about being able to kayak along that shoreline and do that in an area that you don't have to drive an hour away to get to. So this is a unique opportunity. I would like to see the area develop in this way. I think there's a way to do that so that we can weigh the accessibility of the public and getting out there and being able to preserve the existing habitat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Move on to roll call, and then we'll adopt the minutes. So just go around real quick. Start with Lori, and we'll go around.
Lori Lebowski, Clark County Community Planning.
Laura St. John, Park Advisory Board.
John Spencer, PAB.
Barbara Anderson, PAB.
Dave Weston, PAB.
Jay Chester, PAB.
Scott Brownlee, Clark County Public Works.
Jeremy Cave, Clark County Parks.
Bill Bierke, Clark County Parks Manager.
Beautiful.
Leanne, Clark County Parks, that's okay.
All right, and has anybody reviewed the minutes so that they can move to adopt them?
I move to adopt as presented.
See, she reviewed them. I was looking for somebody who actually had, because I haven't.
Oh, I have a quick peek.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Need a couple more. All right, there it goes. Good. Moved. It's good to go.
Just a request on that. Dave was the new secretary. Is it possible when you send these on to Leanne that you might send them out to the team?
Sure.
So we have them before the meeting. That'd be great. Thanks.
All right, on to a presentation on Tara Preston Sorensen.
So we're passing out the two park plans that are going to be built this summer. I'm the project manager for Clark County Public Works that is working with McKay Sincito to design and permit these two parks now. And so this is just a brief update of where we're at and where we're going. And so the two parks that we're building are Sorensen Neighborhood Park and then Tower Crest Park. Tower Crest was about 90% complete back in 2012 before it was put on hold. And Sorensen is, we took from the master plan and now working through the permit. I just got word this morning that we got approval through development engineering, so that's a big step for Sorensen Park. And now we are moving forward to final PSB, which is the final plans and specs. What you see here are, they're not pretty drawings, but this is what actually will be built out there. So these are the plans that we're moving forward with and what these two parks will look like. Right now we're going to be going out to bid around the May time with construction starting June of this year. These parks will be bundled in the bid package. And so what that means is they'll be bid as one package and we'll get one contractor on board to build them. I also sent around some design artwork. I'm not sure if you guys have seen that, but that's going to be the nature play area at Sorensen Park. And so Tower Crest, we're going to be cutting down a significant amount of, not a significant amount of trees, but some trees at Tower Crest is a pretty forested park. And in order to develop that into a park and put in the pathways, some trees are going to be removed and the canopy is going to be opened up at that location. So the trees that are being removed are going to be reutilized into both parks for the nature play area. So what we've designed for Sorensen is a dragon.
Excuse me, when you say reuse, that's like laying them down for the kids.
We're going
to
cut them up. We're going to cut them up, and yeah, we're going to. The one little, this little drawing here.
Okay.
Which is like the dragon and ladybug kind of. The logs are going to reutilize, repurpose at both parks. So it was challenging, but we were able to get the nature play approved by the ADA folks at the county. Nature play is a difficult thing to put into to parks because of the ADA requirements and making sure that everyone has access and ability to get to these locations where we're putting them and then to be able to move about on them. So we worked through with Dave Merritt and the ADA staff on that. And so I'm pretty excited because we're taking nature play a step forward compared to what we've done in other parks and try to have a design art element to it. Right now, Tower Crest is under bid or is under budget. Sorensen is about 10% over budget. What that means is we've eliminated a pathway that was going up the hillside because it wasn't necessarily something that was a strong desire. This is one that kind of bisected the sledding hill. We had some pushback after our neighborhood meeting of this is the one place in the county that the kids can go out, and now we're going to put in a hard surface. It was pretty costly, and we felt that if we wanted to add it in later, we could. But
kids will still get up there. I take my grandkids there. We scoped this out with the neighborhood group.
Right.
That is the best sledding
ever. So what I'm getting at is we're county parks are very tight budget. There's not a lot of bells and whistles. We put in two playground areas, one for smaller kids, one for larger kids. It's pathways. I just issued a submitter for the two water meters to be installed at both parks. The water meter's $30,000. So when you talk about a $500,000 park and you have a $30,000 water meter, we're trying to stretch the dollars as much as possible. So I believe that the design firm has done a good job. We're going to get in alignment with that 10% budget. We believe, you know, we may have some alternate bid items, but we're hoping to get this out early enough for construction season, or we'll get a good contractor on board, get a good price. We just had a public works project go out last week where we came in $500,000 under because we got it out soon enough. And so we're on track to get these parks out, get a good number, get a hopefully a good contractor on board and get them built. What that means is they'll be built and hopefully seated. I'm taking on a different role this year as construction manager for these two parks also. My background is landscape architecture and park design, so we're going to have a stronger, hopefully, eye on the development so that the parks are open for use at the end of the 2016 season, where the two parks we developed last year, we had challenges closing those out with the contractor and then handing them off to the parks department. So I'm open for any questions if you have any.
Do you have business cards with you,
yeah,
Scott? Because I don't think I've got you in my Rolodex yet.
Be careful before you get
this. I've spoken with her several times.
So this whole conflict that they had about making that trail ADA kind of just said, let's just leave it, which I think is a great idea. The kids really don't need a trail to climb up that hill. They really don't. They
well,
get up
we,
there.
In order, so once again, if we put in a hard surface in a park, we have to make an ADA, so that is the switchbacks. And
okay.
So in order, we could only get up so high before we had to start doing some retaining wall work.
Yeah. Which ruined the whole aspect.
You know, it was not a big cost item. I'm not coming to say that it was like a $20,000 cost item, but when we're trying to shave off, you know, $80,000, that's a good chunk to move away from. And so we're trying to preserve that hillside,
okay.
And also the neighbors there, trying to keep some of the loud noise away from the neighbors.
Was that this lady right back here, right there, behind the trees? Yeah.
So
yeah, she came down when we were there too.
I think it's going to be a win-win for everyone. We did have some concerns. There's several residents that want full-size basketball courts out here. We typically don't put in full-size basketball courts at neighborhood parks. These are, you know, 5 acres and under. And so, you know, there's been some good dialogue and some good community input on these. But this goes back to the master planning level that once again happened years ago. We took it back out to the general public about 6 months ago to kind of give them an update on where we're at and where we're going, and receive their feedback. And they actually selected the playground equipment at this park. So we had boards up at the community meeting and four or five different playground options. And so their input was needed to gauge what type of play equipment's out here. You know, we get the typical, can we put a shade structure in over playgrounds? Can we, we are adding drinking fountains to these two parks, which is kind of a new thing with neighborhood parks. We typically don't put in drinking fountains, but we're finding the budget to do that. It's a nice amenity. There's a desire to have restrooms. Once again, scale size, it's not a sports park or a regional park. This is a neighborhood park where it's supposed to be to be able to walk to and serve that 1.5 to 3 mile radius. So,
didn't Milana say she had a contractor that might donate that?
The shelter?
The restroom.
I haven't heard that on this
There's no restroom, Barbara. I think she's...
Yeah, I know there typically isn't.
Yeah, I think she's talking about donating, if I'm not mistaken, some of the trees, plant materials or something.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I think that's what I heard her say.
Oh, okay.
It's either that or she may have wanted to...
Well, she might be.
Having,
yeah, because she took us over there and was saying that they really wanted the drinking fountain and bathrooms just because of its location.
And being that now that we're through, so the development engineering phase is a huge process in this, and so
not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Okay. Well, I wanted to clarify that in my mind because that was
because that opens up sewer, a whole bunch of other requirements. Plus, it's a large additional.
Yeah, and it's a neighborhood park.
You know,
so
it doesn't fit our profile.
Take a coffee can.
Yeah.
Sorry. So your goal is to have these turned over and ready to play.
End of November of this year.
Oh, end of November.
So, once again, these are seeded. They're not soft. So the germination takes some time to get the...
Sure.
So they could look complete, but typically we like to stay off until the grass areas are established. Maintenance comes over and accepts them. Like I said, last year we had difficulty with that process. There was a lot of... I think we finally gave up on some of it and just ended up taking them over. But we're writing a much tighter spec this year, and we're going to have a lot more involvement from both maintenance and myself on making sure the contractor has a weekly schedule, they're following the schedule, and that they're putting in the soil amenities and all the... not saying we overlooked this in the past, it's just we're going to have a stronger set of eyes so that we get a better product at the end of these two parks.
Do you have any more of these handouts?
Yeah, I brought like five of them. So, and I can, if anybody wants
there's
them.
There's some more extra ones here.
And there's the staff of those park development plans. But if you go back to the approved conceptual plan, and that's what we like in theory. This is actually engineered drawings. So I left off all the technical stuff. This is what's being built. There is the amenities and are all the same, but the location of trail may have shifted because of grades and those types of things. So this is what we're sharing when people call and say, hey, what's the park shaping up and looking like? This is what we're sending out to them now.
And I have a lot of faith in your knowledge, but what is the heel going to be?
It's going to be what you see out there now. It's going to be open, non-irrigated, turf. We're looking to kind of leave that kind of a natural, what you see out there now. So,
okay. So it's not going to be touched.
No.
There's a little bit of planting around it, isn't
there? Yeah, that's what we did here is there's a certain amount of trees and lands and stuff that we try to put in. So it doesn't mean these three trees are going to go here. I doubt we're going to do a whole lot of trees up there. We try to put in when we do these parks because we're now bringing in a noise to a neighborhood. So we do try to screen the fence lines with some native material where trees can grow up and there's that separation between residents and neighborhood parks. We ran this with Chinook Park last year where we had to clear a bunch of trees because once we opened it up, we had trees that fell over and they weren't very healthy trees. So it really opened up that park where now neighbors didn't have their privacy. Of course, we didn't have the budget to go back in and put a bunch of trees, but parks came in this past year and replanted it. Hopefully within 5-10 years, some of those trees will grow up and create that screen.
And one thing that can't be redone is the path, so it will be at least a quarter of a mile.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's what we try to gauge here, is that quarter of a mile, so you can loop it and walk it.
Great, thanks.
One area that was of concern with the Sorensen Park was making sure that there was a neighborhood access coming in from the east side. And so that was in conjunction with the Vancouver schools.
Correct, and I forgot to mention that.
That's fine. That was addressed here in this plan, as you can see. So there's an access point coming in from the east side, which is great. So
that's done. I got the easement with Vancouver School District. So that connection will be built in conjunction with this project. At the time, we didn't know if we would be able to make that connection because it can take some time, but we were able to get that approved on their board. So
that's because they like having that park right by the school.
Great, thanks. All right. Thank you.
Before we move on, I just want to mention to the Frisbee Golf people, I think we put this on next agenda, right, to discuss what we were
going I believe
to.
So
we're not ignoring you. You're just a month early on bringing it up as far as where we are in the agenda. So do thank you all for coming and talking, and definitely we did hear you. Moving along to unfinished business and a summer picnic.
Thanks, Scott.
That's you.
Oh, is that me? I thought it was you.
No, you're the picnic person.
Oh, okay. Next in your packet are the two areas that were reserved. One is Louisville Regional Park, and the other is at Kleinland Pond. Those are our two options for holding the picnic. We did not want to be the ones that just arbitrarily made the decision for y'all, because there's pluses and minuses for each of these locations. So we thought we'd bring it back to you and say, which one do you think we would have the greatest potential for participation? You know, getting some of our partners and their families to come and celebrate with us and create a location that's proximal, that would be more enticing. You know, I have to say that there's things I love about both of these locations.
Any opinions?
I do know, I'll just put a little input there. I did find out, I think I mentioned this to you guys at our agenda planning meeting, but there is a very large group scheduled
at Louisville.
The morning in Louisville that's going to impact parking and things like that. It could be a couple hundred people. So Eric Christensen, let me know that just in case that could be a concern for you guys. So.
And we're looking at, what was it, June 23rd
July.
Or July 23rd,
right?
Yeah. So it's end of July. I guess I'll just throw out, let's go for Kleinland then. I move that we hold our event at Kleinland Pond on July 23rd. See, I lost it already.
I second that motion.
Move, second, and consensus. Moving along.
All right.
Draft public facilities code. We're up to Lori.
I am, as mentioned earlier, I'm Lori Lebowski. I'm with Clark County Community Planning, and I come and work with Parks staff with Bill and Jeremy and Leanne on some planning and code issues, just for the new people on the Parks Board. Currently, community planning, I don't know if you know this, but we're working on a comprehensive plan update right now, and I'm working on my part is to work on the code updates, the changes that need to be made to the Title 40 development code associated with the update of the comprehensive plan. The board voted last November. One aspect of that, of their preferred alternative they currently have, is to adopt a public facilities code. We currently have a comprehensive plan designation for public facilities, but no associated code to implement that comprehensive plan designation. So what Leanne mailed to you all a few weeks ago was some of the draft code changes associated with the board's recommendation. Also, as part of the adoption of the parks plan is to have a parks code. So that's what was emailed to you. I've been working with Amanda in the PA's office to have her review of the code changes, and then also I've gotten some great comments from Gene Akers this week, and I'm in the process of incorporating those changes and suggestions that I've received from Amanda and Gene. What I'd like to do today is just walk you through each of the documents that was emailed to you all and see if you have any comments. If you have any questions, feel free to interrupt me at any time. I'm going to start out with, there's a document at the top that says 40.100.070 definitions. I'll just give you a minute to look at that.
Jim, maybe put that up for us.
Yeah. General provisions or definitions?
General definitions. It's 410070.
Were there any changes in the definition?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I'll get to that in a second. And it's a big document because what we do when we do these changes is that we go into the existing Title 40 code and add those sections. So if you go to page 5 of that document, you'll see one of the first changes. I also want to add that we have people in the county that are what we call current planners. They do the development review applications, and I've taken these code recommendations to them to get their suggestions because they are ultimately people who are going to work a lot with this code and be implementing it. And actually, one of their suggestions was to take from the parks plan the definitions, the different definitions, and incorporate them into what they call the general definitions. So page 5, you'll see at the bottom it says community park, and it's just taking from parks plan the definition of a community park, what that is, and that guides them for development applications when they receive one for a community park.
And Laurie, if you've got a situation, which would just be wonderful, that somebody's donated 120 acres in the middle of our, right along Vancouver somewhere, mm-hmm. that would be a great community park. Mm-hmm. Does the definition of 20 to 100 rather than 120 restrict us? Would that be?
That's a very good question. And what I'd like to say is if you look at the last sentence in this little box, it says community parks are usually.
Mm-hmm. So the usually is important, right. And we're good.
That's good.
Yes, and it's really focused more on the purpose of that park. And generally the idea is that it serves Clark County or the neighborhoods around that area. It's a larger service area than, we were just looking at Sorensen Park. That's usually focused on that immediate neighborhood. This will be a little bit bigger scope. So I guess like Luke Jensen Park, this is a community park.
Correct. Neighborhood parks typically serve a half mile radius around the parks. Community parks serve about a 2 to 3 mile radius around the parks and are typically drive-to destinations. That's why we have parking lots where neighborhood parks do not. And then of course the regional parks are definitely destination locations as well with even more amenities.
Right. Okay. Let's see, I'm going to move on.
Is it important to... Nah, skip that. I'll shut up. Keep moving.
No, go ahead. No, these are real, this is a good suggestion.
Well,
I want to hear.
Listening to Bill's definition there, he said usually they're a drive-to. In other words, they usually have a parking lot component. This doesn't say anything about that. But my own answer to myself is, why say it? There might be a situation where you don't need a parking lot, and let's not...
Paint yourself.
No, there's a different help that she's got that does define the amenities that might be in there.
Yeah, but if you look at the last sentence, if you look at community park on page 5, the last sentence, it says because of their purpose and size, community parks require more support facilities such as parking, restrooms, and shelters.
I've made notes and wrote right over parking, so I didn't see it.
And actually, in the parks code, when we get to that, you'll see we have some requirements for community and regional parks, whereas the neighborhood parks, we do not require parking. It's more of an add-on if you wanted to have parking. Also, for neighborhood parks, we don't charge traffic impact fees. And actually, Jean had a really good comment about traffic studies. Neighborhood parks won't have requirement of traffic studies unless they want to provide on-site parking. So.
Now, where does it within that, now, as long as we're talking about it?
Yeah.
I believe that there was some code that required that there be four on-street parking for neighborhood parks for meet the, was it ADA compliance?
That's a good question, and that's also with the neighbor, with the parks code. That issue did come up with the planners, and they referred me to our building official, and he suggested that we stay away from getting any more into that issue with ADA and off-site parking.
Yeah, but only because that's an issue that has come up several times in the past year about,
right,
you know, neighborhood parks not having parking lots per se.
Right.
But that they do have the requirement of, I think it was, someone told me four.
It's not specified right now in the parks code. It just says that.
Well, not in the parks code. It was in some other. That's okay. Go move on.
Okay. We'll get
that's
to that.
That's not changing, though.
Right now, we don't have that requirement of the four off-site parking spaces for neighborhood parks. We don't specify. We just say, you know, that there is off-site parking.
Yeah.
But
off-site.
And
off-site. That, and that's fine.
Usually means in within neighborhood.
Yeah, in front of that neighbor's house.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we could put that in the code, in front of the neighbor's house.
No.
Just kidding. Okay, and just moving through the definitions here, I want to find the next. Let's see. Okay, if you go to page 17, we have the definition of a neighborhood park. And again, that's within the immediate neighborhood, and you'll see that this, actually neighborhood parks was added in 2011, and what we're proposing to do is just expand that section of the code and include community parks and regional parks. And then finally, let's see, we have a definition of regional park on page 20 of this code section. And again, this the idea is the purpose of a regional park is a larger scale. And we didn't want to get into it must be, when you say it must be or it shall be in code, that's a big deal. You absolutely have to do that. We didn't do that. If you look at the last sentence for regional park, it says these parks are usually designed to accommodate large numbers of people. We added the kind of language so that it would be flexible. Also, just first sentence, it talks about the size of a regional park, but it says, but may vary in size depending upon unique characteristics. And that's all I have for this section of code. Are there any questions or?
You know, this has just been tickling. I was going to just ignore it, but wasn't there a time that community parks were defined as a 5-mile radius?
That I don't know. I
don't know if that criteria has changed over the years. We'd have to go back probably prior to our previous comp plan.
Right.
So it's okay. Probably
only because that's niggling at me because Mulata, you know, for the fairgrounds park.
Right.
Something she brings up to me all the time was their lack of notification. And I said, you know, looking at okay.
When you talk about notification, then you're getting into process. And that's a separate issue from parks. And we will talk about process and the level of review,
okay.
Public process for reviewing.
Don't mean to jump you out of there. Go ahead.
If there's no more questions, I'd like to... Jeremy, I want to go to it's 4560, plan and code amendments. Yep. So this is talking about our parks capital facilities plan. If you look at number 3 in this code section, currently, the requirement is that that they're reviewed annually. Our parks plan is reviewed annually, and as you all know, we just adopted our parks plan, and we're going to readopt our parks plan as part of the comprehensive plan update. So my proposal is that we change the language from annually to at least every 4 years, and I added at least so that if you want to review it more frequently, you have that flexibility. But at a minimum, it's reviewed every 4 years.
And why did you choose four?
I thought it would match. I think it's in the capital facilities plan. Is it also every 4 years?
So it becomes part of another process that way, which makes sense.
Right. So if you look at number one, capital facilities plans and plan updates are reviewed at a minimum every 4 years, and the same with school capital facilities plans, just to match what our other processes.
Just to clear it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the capital facilities plan is not the comprehensive plan, right? It's separate. It's the inventory.
It's a component of our comprehensive plan. However, we have different capital facilities plans. With the county, we have transportation capital facilities plans, and those are reviewed every 4 years. They are reviewed more frequently than our comp plan. Bill, did you have a question?
No, just that the capital facilities plan is a component of the Parks Recreation Open Space plan, and that has to be renewed every 6 years. And so, yeah, so to have a review part of the way through, I guess the question is do we need to actually review it every 2 years? And regardless, we have to go through and actually start over again and recreate the PROS plan every six. And so I guess I don't know if it's critical to have it every 2 years. Maybe that's where I could use your thoughts on this. I think what Lori's trying to achieve is the parity between all the other facilities plans.
Right.
Well, that's where I thought, isn't this the inventory section that we worked on?
Well, it's also projects.
And the projects.
And the projects, yeah.
It's all the projects. You have the 6 year and the 20 year capital facilities plans. That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
And my thought on it is I like how her verbiage of at least every. Because, yeah, if you choose to do it in 2 years, there's no reason not to. But it makes sense that at some point you should be reviewing it. And 4 years to match everything else is as good a reason or good as timeline as any.
And if we as a board we want to review it halfway through, say at the 3 year mark, you know, right. Then that this language allows for that to occur.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, I'm going to move along. let's see, Jeremy, if you could pull up, it's 4200, it's land use districts, is the title. So 4200, land use districts, general provisions. Actually, all I'm doing here is just one change. If you look at the bottom of page one in the table, all we're doing here is just adding that designation of a public facilities district. And then having the reference to that code section that we're going to include. So that's what that is. And then actually what I'd like to do is move to the proposed public facilities district, which is 40, it's the document you have at the top says 40-235 public facilities and is double underlined. Okay, thank you. So this would be a whole new code section. It would be a whole new land, it would be a district. I want to emphasize we created this for existing public facilities. And what we envision as far as the process is that any land that Parks has or the school districts has that is undeveloped, whatever that current zoning is for that property, that would remain. It would develop under that zone. And then once it's developed, community planning would take that property through what we call a docket, and we would rezone it to public facilities.
So when you say it's for existing facilities, it doesn't, once we, you know, Sorensen, for example, will become an existing facility.
Right now, yes. Yeah, right now it's zoned residential or whatever. It's going to develop under that district. We're going to include a special use standard for the parks code about development requirements. And exactly, once that's developed, when we do our yearly dockets, that would just be on a list of property that we would rezone the public facilities.
So why do you rezone it after it's been developed and not before it's been developed?
Because we wanted to allow flexibility for the parks district, and actually this is probably a bigger issue for the school district. School district owns property, and populations change, and if they own a piece of property and it doesn't make sense to build a school there because maybe the development's occurred somewhere else, they want to have the flexibility to sell that land and then use that money, those proceeds, to buy that land somewhere else. If it's got a public facility zone on that, that constrains their flexibility.
That's a very important, yep, from the private side, very important aspect of it. You don't want to landlock anyone to where they have to go through an annual review to change it back, or it's better once it's done, then it goes to that use.
Exactly, and that's the feedback we got from the school district.
What about the raw land of parks out in the outer areas of the county and stuff like that? Is that just going to stay what it currently is zoned now? And then,
right.
So this won't occur until after we develop the property.
Correct. So like Luke Jensen, we've mapped where we have developed parks and schools, and what we would do is just change those, like Luke Jensen Park, for example, that would become on the map public facilities. But land that Parks owns that is not developed, that would just remain whatever the zoning is.
What happens to property around an area that Parks folks own? If they change the zoning or something, that could impact.
That's a really good question, and that is something that...
I guess I'm trying to protect the parks in the future,
right,
as development goes toward it.
Correct. So I think this is what you're getting at, but okay, for example, we have Luke Jensen Park, and then maybe there's some property behind here that's zoned residential, and now Bill wants to expand Luke Jensen Park. So in terms of the review process, that extra land, it still has that residential zoning. It goes through the development process, and then after that's developed, then Bill would do a lot line adjustment, and it would be rezoned to public.
And connecting to utilities as they're brought out to the different parks area, access, roadway. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's an issue or not. It's just, I guess, you have to have faith in the future process. I don't have that much faith in the future process. It makes me nervous. But okay.
I did have a question. I didn't see it in this stuff, but maybe you guys haven't got to that with the land use. But as far as buffering, so you know, if I have R16 and R16 and this becomes a park, I am still buffering based on the R16. But if it's now a new zone, so are you guys going to go through that as well? And
that will be in the parks code. And we'll talk about it in the parks code. And if you have suggestions as far as buffering, we can include it in the code language. Okay. I'm going to move on. Actually, I'd like to move on to the proposed parks code. And that is, it says parks, and it's 4260157. So right now we do have code for neighborhood parks. So my idea was, why not expand it to include community and regional parks? Since that section of the code already exists, we add language to address community and regional parks. So when you see the strike through, that we're taking out just all the specific references to neighborhood parks because now it's to parks. And then we have underlying language of the new language we're proposing. If you look section C on page 1, definitions, we added, this is from the parks plan. This is the language we took. And then if you look at the bottom of page 1, it talks about the review processes for different types of parks. And I think, and if you flip over to page 2, there's a table at the top, and that's just another way to describe the proposed process for different types of parks. So neighborhood park is a type 1, lowest level of review. And then we have type 2 for community park. And that's an administrative review. And then my opinion is that for a regional park, that should have a higher level of review. It's a bigger impact. So per feedback from the current planners, we propose that a proposed regional park should be a type 3 review, which is a conditional use, and it goes through a hearings officer. And there's notice and requirements that associated with that, and a hearing, and that sort of thing.
Could you give us just a little synopsis definition difference between 1, 2, and 3?
Okay.
Because there's financial impacts that are associated with each of those.
That is correct. So more time spent, more review, it costs more. A type 1 is basically a staff review. And then a type 2, that would be something that Marty, the community development director, it's reviewed by staff, and then it's approval from community development director. It's administrative review. And then a type 3, that's where you have a hearing, and it's a hearings officer. He's a magistrate, kind of similar to a judge, but not that high level. But there's a night hearing. You have to send out a legal notice for that. An opportunity for people to come in and make public comment. He reviews all the information, and then he issues a decision.
And so with this, it's going to minimize the amount of time and expenditure for like a neighborhood park.
Right. Right. Yes.
I believe neighborhood type 1 is like 21-day process.
Right.
Type 2, 78-day process.
Right.
Like that. On the type 2, is there a reason you guys went with the A for the neighborhood meeting or hearing?
Just thought that it's, you know, a little more impact. Wanted to provide an opportunity for a neighborhood to have comment.
Yeah, I was about to ask, what are the notification requirements in a 2A?
I don't have the different processes, but I can email you the different requirements for the 2A.
Can you give me a rough idea of what the requirements are?
Well, they all have a notice requirement. And I think it's a half mile radius.
Type 3 is 300 foot.
Right, 300 feet. So something like a type 1 is probably a smaller area, if at all. But I could email you that.
Yeah, just for curiosity. I guess where I'm internally conflicted right now on the community park specifically. So on the one hand, I want to keep everything as inexpensive as possible for the park system.
Right.
On the other hand, under the definitions, a community park can be as big and impactful in many ways as a regional park.
Yes.
And so, you know, I could definitely see a need for former, more thorough review. Don't know where I land on that.
I believe also that it's in the 2A process, and I'll double check on this, is that the community development director could elect to elevate the process and make it more, you know, a hearings officer type review.
Neighbors can as well after the neighborhood meeting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is normally why I just do a type 3 from the start, because you end up in it at the end. So that's why I was curious.
Yeah. So, Lori, maybe you can answer this question. Historically, the neighborhood parks have been type 1.
Yes.
And
they will remain type 1.
And community parks have been typically type 2.
Yes.
And then community park or regional parks have been type 3.
We, yeah. We've not had a regional park that we've reviewed recently.
The last one would be Frenchman's.
So we, and when talking with the current planners, they thought, well, a regional park, that's a big impact, that's a big service area, that really should be a hearings officer, high-level review.
Yeah, I think that in my mind, or my memory tells me that regional parks have been type 3 when they went through the process. And so I don't see much of a change here, quite honestly, on this, the type 1, type 2, type 3.
Well, Dave pretty much just answered my concern is if neighbors feel like elevating, they have the ability to do it.
Right.
So.
And that is correct. That's a very good point, is that the way it's written right now, anyone, not even a neighbor, anyone, can walk in and say, there should be a hearing for this park, even if they don't live in that neighborhood.
The other important part, both type 2 and type 3 staff review levels, the same review, basically.
Yeah.
It's a thorough review.
So nowhere in this process are we excluding communication links that are there now and will continue to be. We're just minimizing some of the paperwork, would you say?
We hope so. We hope to minimize the paperwork. Yeah. And for the neighborhood parks, we did want to keep that low level of review, and we did keep the language that gives you the flexibility. So, for example, Sorensen Park, maybe you want to add another play structure. Then that's not another add-on review process, that you can do that.
Right.
Yeah, that was what I liked about it.
So anytime that these get changed is what we're talking about. So even if you add a play structure, it would get submitted for a review if it's a regional park or just if it's a new regional park? Only if it's a new regional park. There is some language here for expansions, review language for if you're expanding a park. But expanding a neighborhood park, if you're just doing something such as adding a play structure, it's not a land use application.
It's more of an upgrade. You're talking about upgrades. Okay. Land use change,
right.
Expansion on lot size.
Okay, right. Just the use table, I tried to think of everything, but didn't. And I got some really good suggestions from Jean Akers this week on the use table. She suggested to add rifle ranges and dog, off-leash dog parks. And
trailheads.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm adding that language. I'm adding those uses into this use table.
I think the idea was trying to keep from any type of recreational site from falling between the cracks. So if we have it identified, it would be easier for our planners to take a look at it and find it in code. Right.
Right, exactly.
Is there any language that if one is not specifically listed that staff can basically approve it?
I do not have that. It is not in here. But I tried to write it so it was something type of similar. For example, Jean suggested recreational facilities. So I added something like, she said a day camp area. So I wrote it day camp, day camping, recreational facility, or retreats. And just, so I did add some language to the use table that I can email once those changes are made, I can send it to you all.
Do we need a use along the lines of meetings and events?
We do have a community center or event center.
I've seen it somewhere.
Somewhere.
A community center.
Mm-hmm. Just missed it again. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. No.
I don't see. There is a small shelter. But let me go back and make sure we have something for community center. I believe in the public facilities code.
Yeah, I've seen it in another rendition. That was definitely in there.
Yeah. And, public facilities, we do have community center as a use. But I can add it to the parks code.
Laurie, and it's line 25 on page 3. It says alterations to approved plan, changes or additions to improve neighborhood parks. So not community or regional parks?
Right. Right.
The last line on page 3.
Yes. And that's what I was mentioning about That's the section in the code I was talking about, that if Bill wants to add a play facility to a neighborhood park, that he can do that without going through another review process.
So if we were to hear Luke Jensen get some more space, get add a court or a field, or is not just limited to something that fits in the, I mean, you go through the land use
right.
review.
Right. This is a community park.
Right.
So there would be some type of review.
If you wanted to add...
if we want to add a playground here.
Playground here.
Let's see.
We would have to go through another land use review.
I think you would.
And that may be what the county wants. I don't know. I'm just saying that...
Would that be even if it was identified as a phase two in an original plan?
Let me check on that. If it's a phase two, mm-hmm. that may not be a review.
A lot of our planning does incorporate future phases, yeah. so we can afford one piece at a time.
Yeah.
Let me check with Vicki.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to hamstring your...
I agree.
Yeah, your efforts and
mm-hmm.
well, along to go back for land use.
Along the same lines, couldn't you have a similar situation in a regional or a community park? I mean, it seems like you'd want to expand this to all of the above.
Yeah. So. Right. Let me check with the current planners on how that's handled as far as phasing of parks.
And I guess I would just speak on the other side of that in a neighborhood park, the type of amenities that you might add later are less impactive,
which is what
that the community and the regional parks really need to have a little stronger control points on them.
Sure.
And while I hate adding paperwork or time limits because I get impatient to get things going, I still see the value in maintaining those for the community and regional at the level that you've got them. So
right, it's finding a balance.
Balance.
Parks needs to have the flexibility. That's also gets into the issue of affordability for parks, because that's money spent on reviews and that sort of thing. It's money that doesn't go.
And maybe part of it, maybe some of the amenities or some of the changes should be reviewed by staff, and that's fine. And maybe some other aspects of it need to be go through a review. But.
So you might, that's a real good point. It might be the type of amenity that's being added to the community or regional.
You already get the land use, the expansion of the lot line, and that's already covered.
Yeah.
It's
because the one thing I don't want to see is we'll do the initial development right here, and then after that, all bets are off.
Yeah,
and we can add all this other stuff.
No.
Then.
Yeah, I think that's why you need
and the community and regional, huge impact.
No, it can. I agree.
I think Bill touched on this too. I mean, when you're designing something like this, you're master planning.
Yeah.
The most that you can envision on the site, so you get it permitted under or approval under that, master plan. That way you can piece it in as you find the funds.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he, I'm sure, does that.
They do a great job.
And I basically see it by the amenities that we're planning on adding. Like I said, a piece of play equipment, does that necessarily have to go through a review process? Or as opposed to a new restroom, a new parking lot, a big shelter, or something like that, that does actually bring in utilities and all that. Of course, that to me triggers a higher level review process.
So I
can see where, minimal criteria could be set for
minimal impact.
Minimal impact for actually all three, neighborhood, community, and regional. Depends on what it is.
Already master plan.
Yeah, I would certainly think that would be the best balance. Is looking at including for all three minimal impact things such as a piece of play equipment.
Right. Some kind of threshold.
Yeah.
Play equipment's fine.
Yeah.
When you're putting in. Remember the baseball people? They wanted some kind of regional event facility.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that should have.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Should be, have a review process.
Absolutely. That's huge.
Let's see. So those are the uses. Parking requirements. As far as community and regional parks, they do have to... We are requiring a traffic study because they have to provide on-site parking for the parking code. Neighborhood parks, if you look at B for neighborhood parks, The new version, I changed this language that says that if they're not providing on-site parking, they do not have to do a traffic study. And then under neighborhood parks with parking, it talks about either you meet on-site parking requirements if you want to provide parking, or that you indicate a safe walking route from the neighborhood within a quarter mile. And then table as far as traffic impact fees. And then talking about changes to an approved plan. Right now it's very specific to neighborhood parks, but I'll go back and look at community and regional parks and add some clarifying language about thresholds of review, that if it's something minimal to a community and regional park, such as play equipment, that it's not another review process.
Perfect.
One thing I see on here is a safe walking route where it's talking about on-site parking. Yeah, or actually where it's talking about on street. And I know the safe walking route's been a hot topic lately.
Yes.
And if there is any going to be any more guidance than just the safe walking route, who's interpreting that?
That's been in the neighborhood parks code language. It's been there for a few years now. So that hasn't changed. I could consult though with current planners about safe walking routes.
Okay.
But I think if you're not going to provide parking, you're going to have to at least on a plan show how can people walk safely to that park.
Okay.
Is it ridiculous to think that we would say that they need to provide parking?
Well, for a neighborhood park, you're not going to want to
not park. Necessarily a neighborhood park, but.
Well, for community and regional parks, we do have parking on-site parking requirements, and that's per our parking code.
It just seems like a lot of times there's in some areas there's not enough parking, and then in other areas there's like huge parking. So I don't know how to balance that out. So
I think that's an issue that you've dealt with with neighborhood parks where you're in an older neighborhood and they were built before they were required to provide sidewalks, and I know that can be a challenge.
We've got one. We've got a few of those really old parks, and they really don't have good ADA accessibility. And some of them actually do have natural parking right out in front of the neighborhood park, just because of the width of the street. Some have half street improvements that were required, but in some parks there's no parking that's close by. You have to park into in a neighborhood. However, there are curb drops with truncated domes, ADA improvements that have been made, so you can't actually access the park once you park in a neighborhood. But with neighborhood parks, again, it's basically considered walk to sites, and so. I know a lot of neighborhoods don't want people driving in from a long distance to use the park. And when the one thing that Scott Brantley mentioned, like at Sorensen, they're asking for full court basketball courts. And what was found in the past is that people were driving in from all over the place, even across the bridge, to play full court basketball. And so having a single court there, half court, eliminates that. So it kind of brings it back into the neighborhood type usage instead of organized groups coming in and actually playing a game there. So, and that impacts everything, the parking and the usage and everything, so.
I just know because times have changed to where a lot of times now people won't let their kids just go to the park without them going. And so it just seems like there's more of a need for car parking just because, before I know, like when I grew up, I went to the park and it was a long ways away from my house and nobody ever checked on me. It's just kind of the way it was. Well, now I would never let my grandkids go to a park without me being right there. So just in the changing times, I'm just, I just want to make sure that we're aware of some of that stuff. So when people do go, they're able to enjoy the parks.
Would it,
and there is an important,
you know what I mean?
Would it make sense to have some sort of, and I always hate to use the word requirement, of a transportation plan that doesn't say you have to have parking or sidewalks. It just says, identify how people are getting here.
And I think that's what they're trying. That's what's accomplished.
Is that effectively it?
The safe walking route requirement for a neighborhood park. For example, Sorensen, it shows a trail from that neighborhood.
Right.
To the parks.
And I know transportation is looking at certain parks that are actually even subdivisions that don't have currently have sidewalks. And then, so they have this long list that they're actually going down and trying to accommodate, you know, and sidewalks don't have any curb drops for, you know, street crossings and ADA accessibility. I know they're working on those. They said that they are primarily working on the larger areas, but they're not getting into the neighborhoods yet. I think it's all timing and money based. I know they are working on it, but not to the degree that we'd like to see them do it, and based on public funding that's available. One thing that Barbara brought up, you know, about safe accessibility within a quarter mile radius. The question is, you know, how do you, if you consider crossing a collector or arterial, you know, to a park, that's a huge problem sometimes, because mm-hmm. when you're on one of those two types of roads, mm-hmm. it's hard for kids to get from one side to the other side to get into a new neighborhood where that park actually resides. And so that oftentimes becomes a huge barrier.
Yes, you know?
So the kids on the north side of the street can't play in the park on the south side.
And that's where we started talking about the crosswalks. Not even necessarily a controlled one, but at least one painted
right.
across at key points. Just nitpicking on page 1, line 8, you scratched out in section, and in the readability, the provisions of this section apply to the development of parks as defined. I would leave in okay. in section okay. 40.100. Otherwise, it just says as defined 40.100.
Okay. It's probably a program.
But, yeah, but back to that crosswalk issue. We talked about this before, and you said that in the safe walk evaluation that staff does.
Yes.
That's going to become part of the process.
It's been part of the process for neighborhood parks.
Yeah, we just never get crosswalks because they're expensive. Because yes. we always want to do those expensive ones. Is there?
Well, I think also the issue for Transport Public Works is they want crosswalks at intersections and not mid-block crosswalks.
And not on local streets, which makes it tough.
Yeah, right. Which makes it tough.
A lot of these are going to be on local access streets.
The ones that we're looking at are like on 149th Street. And the neighbors have said, let's just get some paint and go do it, you know? Because they figure if they paint the stripes there, it'll make it a little safer for the kids to cross. We hit the other park, it'll be a mood issue. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, looks good. I think it incorporates a lot of stuff you've talked about.
All right, well, thanks. I mean, that's what I was going for, so I'm glad to hear that.
Well, we like the flexibility that you've given to us making changes to our parks.
Okay. So, Lori, what kind of time constraints are you under to try to get this wrapped?
I need to get it to our admin staff by February 22nd. So maybe February 19th.
February
19th? Yes.
Next Friday.
So do you want a motion to support it then? Somebody want to make such a motion? Something along the lines of move to support the code as presented?
Yeah, I'll make the motion that we support the code as presented by Lori.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? You don't get a chance. Moving onward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori, for working on this code.
Yes, that's been kind of good stuff.
Obscure for the longest time, and so thank you for bringing this team up to life.
Yeah. I want to make it work for you guys.
Appreciate it.
The parks.
And welcome back, and it's good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
All right, Bill's turn on the dog park.
I'm sorry, I'm going to bring that up, Jeremy. The off-leash. So I think I brought this up to the Parks Advisory Board recently in the last meeting, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been under manager's notes, but I have not so far have seeked your support to move forward with this, and that is my purpose today. And so just a little background information on this off-leash site. The closest one that we have right now for off-leash area is over at Pacific Community Park on Northeast 18th Street and 172nd Avenue. And that is approximately an 8-acre off-leash area, and it is being overutilized right now. And primarily due to the fact that it's so close to the city-county border, so a lot of city residents use the site. And it is used every day of the year. And so this is 192nd Avenue, one block over Pacific, and then 18th Street is right here. So this is only about a mile and a half away from Pacific Community Park, which is northwest of there. And so what you see here is the Harmony Sports Complex, which is an 80-acre site where there's multiple sports being played there with soccer and baseball. And more recently, these two fields were constructed as synthetic soccer fields. And so this one is going to be constructed pretty soon, right?
Hopefully.
And we have a grant on that one?
Yeah.
And so what we have is a 10-acre parcel that is located right here behind the Humane Society on 192nd Avenue. And so what this site will do is it will relieve the pressure off of the Pacific Community Park, and it will actually provide the 10 acres that will actually support, you know, added usage in the future, which is great. Plus, it will provide, this is the only area that the Humane Society uses to run their dogs off leash right now. And so this will provide them a huge opportunity to run their dogs that are in the Humane Society off leash. The one thing that we're also looking at is the growth of the Green Mountain area. Between probably 1,400 to 1,800 homes going in that area. And guess where they're going to be going? They're going to be going right to Pacific Park, which is already overloaded. So we're hoping that this will be a good offset. People will start coming here. The one nice thing about this property is it is forested. And there is some natural areas right now. This is the Vancouver Maintenance Station right here. And they've been dumping in here, both in here and in here in the woods. We'd like to have them clean that up. And this will actually make kind of a natural parking spot. And then they're not going to do any logging or anything. All they're going to do is just create some trails through the trees, probably chip trails. And this is kind of an open area, so dogs can run off leash. This will be fenced. And the only downside that I see to this, we do not have a lot of other properties for choices. In the city of Vancouver, I've talked to Julie Hammond, the parks director. She has no property available. As well as city of Camas, they're pretty limited on any off-leash areas. So it's kind of back to us to try to provide additional acreages. The downside is here's the Klondike Rifle Range that we manage. And there's also the sheriff's rifle ranges back here, so noise is kind of a factor. However, you know, these dogs will get used to it. I mean, they become acclimated, they should be fine. This is a heavily treated area, so there's a good sound buffer here. This is down the pit, and so it won't be too bad. That is exactly what I think that we need at Pacific Park, is to provide some relief, because maintenance of that site is really tough because it gets used every day. So I think this will provide that relief that we need. So with the support of our Parks Advisory Board, I'd like to write a staff report and present it to the Board of County Councilors.
And I don't think you said one of the important things is dog paws is actually paying.
Oh, yes, yes. It's not going to cost us anything. Dog paw will adopt the site much like they did with our other off-leash sites, like Dakota at Pacific Park and at Hawkinson, and then at 149th Street. They manage those properties, so it doesn't cost us anything to manage them. And so it is essentially no cost to us. This property hasn't been used for anything but dumping on, and so that'll help to clean that site up. And so that is it. So I think it's a win-win.
Move to recommend this support to proceed with the dog park off-leash area that awesome. Bill presented.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nobody opposed. Moving on. Survey.
Another survey. Okay. Good question. how many of you, by a show of hands, find that it's easier to accomplish things with people you know? Sometimes.
So long as you know.
Okay. I'm glad you all say that, because I feel that way too. I think that we accomplish more. You've heard me do this dance before. That one thing that I'd like to see us do this year is focus a lot on building relationships with some of our peer groups. And I think that peer group starts right here within ourselves, because we've got some new members. We've been so busy in the past year since we formed that even some of our members that have been with us before this session, we haven't had time to really get to know. So I suggested that we take a minute and share some information for others in our group, stating that this information will not be shared outside our group. This is not for public consumption. And I kind of put through a little member survey here. Sort of like those of you whose feelings were hurt because I forgot your birthday last year. It's because I didn't know when it was, you know? So that was one of the things here. Anything you're not comfortable sharing, you don't have to. How's that? But it would be nice to get to know you a little bit. And within it, one of the other things we talked about was that we don't accomplish everything that we need to in these meetings. And that these meetings really should be a time of making decisions and doing motions to move things forward. That the real work and recommendations should come to us from subcommittees. We didn't take time last year to create them, primarily because our one strong focus was that comp plan. But now we're at a point where we need to take a breath, take a look at who we are, and do a couple of things. One is setting some basic norms and processes for PAB itself moving forward. So one of the committees that we put here is not a standing committee, but a temporary one that might take a look at the PAB standards and a training book. I know that when we were on PRAC before, we had a training curriculum that we went through, which just helped to support, you know, our knowledge base. We don't have that for PAB because we're new. The others are standing committees that either John and I thought should be added, or were ones that we kind of pulled from where we had before on PRAC. So we would ask that as a member of PAB that everybody volunteer for at least two subcommittees that they're willing to serve on. These don't have to meet all the time. You probably need to have at least one meeting to define what your scope is. And I did pull out an example of one of the meetings we had, and I'll be glad to share those. And that was the first minutes from our business committee way back when on PRAC, where we defined what the business and financial subcommittee did. So you want to decide what your subcommittee's purview is. Other than that, you would meet as needed. We'd also like, because it runs better, if someone who has a true passion for something leads it, and it shouldn't always be John and I, although both of us like to get involved. But we'd like you to volunteer up. Hey, I'd be willing to serve as the chair of this subcommittee.
Or if you know somebody else who might be interested.
Oh, sure, nominate someone, you stinker, you.
No, meaning it doesn't need to be somebody on PAB.
Oh,
We were already looking at this list and saying, Trails, Kelly. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay, I thought you were going to nominate. Okay.
No, you're safe.
I'm safe. The other thing is you'll notice that there are two blank ones here, and that's because we figured we weren't know-it-alls that knew where we should be going. If you know of or think of another committee that you think we need to have, we can create it. And then down here under the PAP goals, this doesn't have to be anything big or fancy. I asked Leanne to go ahead and just include mine, just so it make you a little bit more comfortable with what I shared about me, you know. Notice I didn't put in there I'm a troublemaker. But y'all already knew that. So if you would take a few minutes before our next meeting to share what you are willing to share about you, we'd sure appreciate it. Now, how would you like to do this? Would you like the survey in a recognized form, and then you could all funnel it back to Leanne? I guess I would say that the absolute minimum you have to do here is your name and your contact numbers.
I would prefer electronic, and then I can just fill it and send it.
If you just, yeah, if you just send it out to the committee, and then we'll just send it back to you.
That works, and I can print them out for the next month's packets.
Thank you, Leanne.
That it? Not to give you money.
Yeah, we'll form the committees next time, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna get bored.
So we are running behind schedule. I'm thinking since we've got PAB goals listed on the member survey, we can talk about PAB goals next time.
But those are only mine.
Well, no, but if everybody else is writing their goals.
Oh, okay.
It leads to a better discussion next time anyway. So let's skip PAB direction and goals and let Bill talk more because he likes that.
Oh, sure. All right, thanks, Ed. Let's see here. Just to bring up to speed on some of the things that we've been up to lately, we met with the Camp Hope board to discuss the master plan of the site.
I didn't quite hear that.
We're planning on master planning Camp Hope.
Oh, Camp Hope.
And that's
for
the Camp Hope folks that have adopted basically Camp Lewisville across on the south side of the river from Lewisville Park, and they've been invested for a few years on an agreement with us, and they are basically providing services to at-risk youth by allowing them to come out, explore the wilderness, stay overnight in the buildings, they call them pods, that are around the camp, and learning actual trades. You know, a lot of these at-youth risk kids have not really had a strong education. They probably won't be scholars in their future. So the intent is to teach them some trades, and so some carpentry skills, some electrical skills, plumbing skills. You know, as they rebuild the camp, they're actually involving the kids to help do that, which I think has been fantastic. It's been largely successful, and they're actually reaching out and engaging in other groups to expand their usership of the site. The one thing that they wanted to do, in addition to reconstructing the site, which is an old derelict Girl Scout camp that had not been utilized for quite a few years, they're actually going through and rebuilding all the buildings, the original footprints, so the pods, there's some restrooms there, the old watchperson's residence, they've already rebuilt that from stick frame, right from the foundation back up. But they also want to include a couple larger buildings to feed kids, you know, like a big cafeteria type area, and to, you know, add some more trails throughout the camp area and add some amenities like, what do you call those cable rides that you go on?
Zip lines.
Yeah, they want to do the zip lines. So they want to actually add some outdoor programming. And in order to do that, because this is a regional facility, a master plan is required. So, about a year and a half ago, Department of Environmental Services went in and did some thinning because of the hazard trees all over. There's a lot of standing dead and trees that were in the camp within the strike zone of all the structures. They went in and did some thinning, and it opened up the area. And it also provided about $42,000 in revenues to us that we could use towards the master planning of that site. And so, it looks great. And so, in addition to the, you know, improving the site itself, we want to talk to the Boy Scouts of America, who actually own property to the east, and see if we can utilize their access through the camp, because access going into the camp right now is fairly limited. It's like a one-lane road, so you can't have two cars going in two directions. So the idea is to one way in, one way out. And so that will provide a relief on emergency services and allow that camp to grow a little bit. So that's what's going on with Camp Hope right now. We've basically got conservation techniques involved to help us with the planning process, and that should be done somewhere towards the end of this year. So that's happening. Had a very successful tour with our RCO grants manager, Allison Green. She's the new person that we just met, and we went out and took a look at the sites that we had identified for grant priorities, as well as a couple sites that Department of Environmental Services, namely Legacy Lands folks, are interested in. The first one is a 5-acre parcel in 5th District 10 that we want to acquire, and we've already got appraisal ordered for that site. And so we walked around that property a little bit, and she was impressed with where it's located. A sidewalk comes and terminates right there at the edge of the property, which provides that community access, which is great. And it also potentially ties into a green belt off to the north that we can actually expand that into future recreation. So she really liked that. Our second stop was at Lower Daybreak area, which is basically that 105-acre open pasture land that's being farmed right now. That is scheduled to be a future regional park facility. And so Department of Environmental Services, it's in their ownership or their possession right now, and they want to move forward with some development components of that. Do we have that, Jeremy? I think we have the master plan for that site. That site was master planned years ago. That's not the other one. Daybreak. This is the next one I'll be talking about here in a second. I think we included that on the photo, if I'm not mistaken, but we'll see. Anyways, so it's about 105, 110 acres. It was master planned to basically replace the small park that's on the east side of this road here. Here's East Fork of Lewis. Here's where the existing park is at right now. The river has changed course, and it's coming in here. But the master plan is to actually provide a little more parking here, equestrian center here in the corner, and some trails, and actually preserve this entire streamway right here. It's being eroded at a pretty shocking level. This last flood eroded about 12 feet more of bank along this whole stretch, so I'm going to try to shore that back up so it doesn't continue to eat into the land here. Off-leash equestrian trails, and with the possibility, our intent is to actually create an equestrian trail that links us all the way to Lewisville Park and all the way down to Paradise Point State Park. That's the whole purpose of having ownership along the whole south line of the East Fork Lewis, so we can have that regional trail that is multi-use, so that is walking, equestrian, and biking. And so this would be an actual regional facility, complete with shelters, restrooms, and the equestrian center. We're not quite sure if that's going to work or not. We've talked to three different equestrian centers, and they're all saying that they're worried about flooding in the future and how that might affect this area here. And so we noticed that the 100-year flood comes right in here, but they just don't think that this is a big enough footprint that accommodates their needs. So we'll take a look at this again and see what that potential use could be. Okay, the next one that we went to was the Lewis River Ranch. That was the one that Jeremy had up just a little bit earlier.
I just ask on that one?
Yes.
You said 105 acres, right?
Yes.
And they're saying the footprint is too small for their needs?
In this corner right here, because we're trying to put a equestrian center in here. This is probably about 40 acres. They want more like about 60. But we don't really want the entire thing to be dedicated towards equestrians. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to fit some other components in here, actual park facilities. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at more like about 50 to 60 to 70 acres for their equestrians.
Okay.
Even though we are providing equestrian trails on this site.
Is the plan to keep the boat ramp? Is that
absolutely. Okay. Yes, that stays there. And so it's just a matter of actually expanding this parking lot. The one thing that I found out from our tour is that when we have any indoor recreation, such as sports arenas or community clubs, anything like that, if it's built on park property that has a grant encumbrance on it, that becomes a problem because RCO does not support indoor recreation. It's outdoor recreation. So we got to be really careful.
Okay.
We use grant monies to acquire property, and they encumber this entire site. If we were to build an indoor arena right here, we'd be into a grant conversion situation, which is not easy to kind of
yeah. So how do they define indoor? Does that mean it has to have four walls? Or?
Yes.
Okay. So you can actually
restrooms and shelters don't count, because they're quasi open.
but community centers and anything that's actually boxed in for the purpose of recreating indoors qualifies as something that they do not distinct.
I'm glad of that, because I was starting to think we had to leave one wall off for all restrooms.
So it's very important that we keep that in mind when we go out for acquisition grants, that we make sure that they don't encumber, because what they want to do is encumber the entire property that we're going after a grant on. We need to make sure we shave off a small portion so that square footage of property doesn't come into play later on and bite us. So that was kind of a learning experience when I went out with her. So this is so this grant is being pursued by Pat Lee, and some of you might know Bill Dyker. He's been invested in trying to write up the grant language for this. Okay, Jeremy, let's go to the next one. This is Goose River Ranch property. Again, this is Legacy Lands based. These guys want to get an acquisition grant to acquire this property. Here's Lewisville Park, here's Camp Hope, here's the highway, and here's the property that the Wendelman family would like to sell us if we have the money to afford it. Of course, we're gonna need grant money. This piece you might be familiar with. You see the gravel trucks coming in and out of here on the highway. This is a big gravel pit. And so what they were asking is what we would think about this piece for the future. What can we do with this site? Right now, we own these parcels along the river, and that's going to stay in conservation. All these pieces along the river will stay in conservation, but what are we going to do with this stuff in here? So the one thing we did talk about is we have a huge need, of course, for mountain biking, disc golf again, and also some camping. And so Lewisville is programmed out, basically. It books up fast with reservations. It is probably our most popular site that we have in our park system. We thought if we can add like a Lewisville Park Phase 2, you know, addition in here, you know, so we provide that additional day use, the possibility of overnight camping. This gravel pit would be perfect for mountain biking, you know, and after that gets reclaimed and turned into, you know, a more usable site, then they could have single tracks, dual tracks, make a tournament level so people can come in from all over the county and, you know, either ride or compete or do whatever they want. Of course, along with a bigger facility like that, they do want overnight camping, RV parking, you know, a camp host, all that kind of stuff. So it's something to think about. This is 360 acres. It's a big piece. Like I said, these areas along the river, at best, what you're probably going to see as an addition is probably that multi-use trail. So it would be a trail for walking, biking, and getting from one of our properties to the next, all the way down east fork of the Lewis River.
Do you think it would be busy overnight camping?
We haven't done overnight camping yet, but we're constantly getting requests for it. And so I would think it would be busy. And with its proximity to battlegrounds, you know, the urban areas, you know, people can run to the store and get stuff. I think it'd be probably pretty popular right away. The plan is to actually buy it in phases because we don't have the money to buy it all in one piece. So we do from here, so we probably buy a quarter here, a quarter here, a quarter here, just in multiple grant phases. That's the idea going forward. And so obviously we'll be supporting their grant on this one. And so they're asking us, you know, what should we go after? What type of grant should we go after? And so local parks is a good grant to go after with RCO because of the park components going into it. However, with acquisition, the maximum limit is $1 million that they'll support, and we have to provide 50% match on it. With the trails grant, there is no limit. So whatever we ask for, or whatever we can support, they can support the other half of it.
What
so.
About camping grants? For campgrounds?
It's kind of considered in local parks. It's kind of combined. So with the Camp Hope here, Lewisville Park here, Big Regional Site, we've got Lewis River Ranch here, and then the trail system that is going to connect us all the way to Paradise Point State Park in the future. I think it's a great addition. So plus, you know, we can actually utilize this and put this to use. Basically, since it is a gravel pit, the restrictions are fairly low on it. It's not the restrictions that other areas of the park would have. So I think it'd be a good use of that site.
I see those expressions.
So that's another one that we looked at. And then, of course, the last grant that we, or the last site that we looked at was the Selection Trail. So the north-south leg going from Battleground North up towards Battleground Lake State Park, trying to get that last 1.2 or 1.3 mile segment completed. So it's not a trail to nowhere anymore. So it'll actually connect the state park to the city. And then going south, that is going from Battleground down to Sam and Morgan property, 80-acre property, which is also right next to Cedars Golf Course. So it basically follows the whole rail corridor, and a lot of support from the city of Battleground. In fact, they're planning on adding the trail this summer to the extent of their city limits. Yep. And so we have to pick it up. Well, actually, the city limits actually goes all the way down to Salmon Morgan Creek. So I don't think we'll have to worry about that one too much. I'm more focused on the one going north out of Battleground. So making that connection. We did find out when that trail was originally built. And the reason we had to stop is because we had one property owner that refused to help us with an easement through the property right along the rail line. And so I just contacted them the other day, and they're still not willing to budge. There is about 20 feet of easement, but it is on a gradient like this, so it's going to take some effort to try to make that wide enough to be a usable trail at 10 feet wide. So still pushing forward with it to see what we can do. And so I'm hopeful that we can be successful on that this year. Harmony Sports Complex, just to let you know, we went out and grabbed the Harmony Sports Complex parking lot this week, and it was a mud bog. And with the addition of the two new synthetic fields, the usage was substantially higher than it has in past years. I think past years, I don't think it got that much use, did it, Jay?
It didn't. We shut them down in the first part of November and never let anybody back there until first part of March.
So. Right, and that went from basically zero to about 200 cars a day.
Yeah.
And all this pouring rain, it tore the parking lot apart. So we had our roads crews go in and grade and gravel the site. And it looks, hopefully it'll hold up.
It looks great.
You've been out there to see it?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
We had some before pictures. We don't have any after pictures, so I didn't bring them up here. But the before pictures were pretty rough. It looked like the moon with water on it. Prairie Softball Fields acquisition, I talked about this. We will be meeting with the family who wants to sell us the 32-acre ball field area. We've ordered the appraisal, and as soon as we get the appraisal back, that's when we'll talk to them about that acquisition. That's in 5th District 6, and we are nearing concurrency mid-year, I believe. So this will satisfy concurrency, and plus we'll pick up some existing ball fields. And what I really like about it is that we have the ability to buy it, first and foremost. We have a partnership with the City of Battleground, which is great because they will manage it and actually provide the sports programming, so we're kind of hands-off. Also, we're not taking away sports, you know. But if we were unable to buy this property, it would probably go into residential development in the future. So it's pretty important. I was just happy that they are able to sell it to us and that they haven't platted it out, so it's going to cost millions of dollars. Instead, it's going to cost probably just over $500,000 to buy 32 acres, which is phenomenal in this day and age. Vancouver Municipal Senior Softball, their permitting is completed, and the permitting and the design is completed, and they are actually getting ready to start construction up at Pacific Community Park. They're building their piece of it. This is theirs right here. And we also have Miracle League that are designing and permitting their fields, and that's these two fields. This will be rubberized surfacing for kids in wheelchairs, so they can get around the entire site. This is a smaller field for the kids as well. Both groups together are required to add parking, which is right up here. And what's nice about this is kind of our first partnership where they are actually doing the work. They did the design work, the planning work, paid for the permitting, and they're paying for the construction, so it's not cost us anything. And this was actually a phase two component of Pacific Park to begin with, and so they're actually fulfilling that phase two requirement, which is great. And so
I would think by the end of this year, both fields, actually, at least the Vancouver Municipal Senior Softball Field will be completed. I know that Miracle League is slightly behind them as far as getting going. I think their funding hasn't come through like they'd hoped. And so it's all about funding. So I think by the end of this year, at least the one field will be done. And by the end of next year, the other fields will be completed. So good partnership. And anytime we have to get in a partnership where I don't have to pay money out of our budget, we're in great shape. I always look forward to that. That is it. That's what I got for the report, for my report. And is there any questions on anything that I brought up, or do you have anything else?
Where are we at on staffing?
Staffing. So we have got seven decision packages in for the spring supplementals. And staffing is one of those. Basically, we're asking for a grant writer to help us with grant writing. That's one of those decision packages that was not approved this last fall. But we're putting it in front of the board of county counselors, and so that'll be in front of them for the spring. Mm-hmm. And if that does get approved, we should know by April 1st.
What can this group do to help support your efforts in that? Because I was real surprised that it didn't get passed the last time, honestly. And it just seems that if there's some way that we could bring the message for you, or...
I think you guys did a great job this last year, because every time we went in front of the board with all the work sessions on the comp plan, we mentioned that, our needs, and it didn't happen. Out of the 8 decision packages that we submitted last fall, we had 2 of those that came through. I'm hoping, and I'm hearing some good things about this spring being a little bit more lucrative for us as far as getting some of those decision packages approved. And so it's actually carrying, more of those decision packages are carrying through the budget office, mm-hmm. which is usually the first step, and then from there it goes to the board. So I've seen recently that I think all of them are going forward. So with all the decision packages, one is based on, actually 2 are related to staff. There's one that we have a project employee that's helping our volunteer coordinator, as well as our park scheduler out, and it was an 18-month project position, which is coming to an end in mm-hmm. June. And if that does not get turned into a full-time position, it will go away, and that's going to put us into a crunch. So just so you know that basically our core parks admin group consists of about 5 people. And back when Vancouver Clark Parks was combined, and actually even before that, the admin staff was comprised of about 12 people, which include planners and grant writers and different things. We kind of lost all of that when we separated from the city of Vancouver. And so we're desperately trying to pick up some of that critical staff. We're not asking for a bunch of staff, just like 1 or 2 people to help fill those critical gaps to help us get some of these grants that we're going after.
Just a quick question. I recall when you were talking about budget, there was an issue where you have funding for admin, but you don't have the budget to do anything. I can't remember what that issue
was. That was another decision package.
Yeah.
Our admin budget was essentially stripped. We were in pretty good shape when we first departed from the city of Vancouver and broke out on our own. They took the money that we would have gave to the city of Vancouver for the admin and brought it back into the county. And we had about $700,000 to work with in the 2014 year. In the 2015 year, all they financed was salaries and benefits. No monies to actually do anything else,
right.
You know, for admin group. And what that means, have a consultant help us with our parks comp plan. You know, equipment, vehicles, typewriters, just copy machines, just basic essential stuff. There's no money there. It's just like blank. And so we've been asking in this last decision package to get some money back so we can afford, you know, some of these things. So we're not burdening our maintenance budget, because that's exactly what we're doing right now. We have no money, so we're actually further burdening our maintenance funding for admin stuff. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And so we're asking for about $200,000. In fact, one of those costs is our park ambassadors. That's our temporary staff that used to be our fee collectors in parks. And they go out and in the summer months provide a lot of help with getting people into the reservations and doing all that stuff. We have no money for them this year. So if we get no funding, they will be gone. And so that'll be kind of a
that'll close that chapter on them, which will be really sad. The lifeguard program is also at risk, and so money is pretty critical on that. Also, another decision package, which is like a broken record, is the 2010, when we went through the budget crisis, we took all of the basically general funded parks within the urban unincorporated area and shoved them into the MPD parks budget, and they still reside there today. So we're asking for some general fund monies to get them back out before it strips out the MPD budget, because that's what it's doing.
Bankrupts us, yeah.
It's about $700,000 a year to maintain those parks, which this MPD budget should not be doing.
Okay, so now this spring budget thing is coming up soon. Do we have dates on it yet?
It is.
So that we know to put it on our calendars to give you the face support,
yes.
If nothing else?
It's going in front of the board, I believe, mid-March. I can shoot you the calendar, and I believe it gets approved on right around April 1st. That's when it goes into the hearing. So it would be good to have some public testimony.
I think you and I need to talk about this and see how we can engage.
Everything.
We need a stronger message so that hopefully it'll really be heard this time that you can't bring parks back to Clark County and then not give any support to, I mean, you're doing a great job. We're not criticizing you, Bill. But the bottom line is that I think some things are falling through the cracks because of a lack of support staff.
But do you think some of that is because part of the reason of doing the justification of splitting was because we were going to save all this money, and so...
Yeah, I do. I absolutely agree with you, Candace.
So I think part of it's political that if they don't show that they're saving tons of money, then it's not
going to sacrifice our
go over well. So
yeah.
I think when we support or go forward, you know, we need to really look at how money-wise that's going to help. Because I think that's what's going to really help. Is if we, okay, so if we get a grants writer, it's going to help
the
us.
The grant writer would more than
how many grants are available that we're not applying for because we don't have anybody to write? I don't know what that number is, but I think those are some of the key points we need to make sure we put on there is, hey, if, you know, we had a grants writer, we could go for $5 million worth of grants. Without a grants writer, we don't have anybody to do that. We possibly are missing out on $5 million worth of grants, or whatever that number is. I don't know that number. Mm-hmm. Just say, you know, whatever that number is. But I think in order for us to support and get those things, I think we really need to make sure that, and I know I say this a lot, but I just know that that was one of the big driving points in separating us was to save the money. So I just think if we can give them what we're saving or gaining or financially is helping the county, I think that that's going to do more weight than us just showing up and saying, hey, we really think this. Because I agree with you. I think we need to support, be at those meetings so they see us.
Well, I
just think
even,
we need to
even
really
talking with
that.
Mark, though, the grant writer, to me, we shouldn't have to put any dollar thing there at all. I mean, for the other ones, I see a strong need to cost justify each of those positions. But so I think that it all boiled down to the fact we're not adding one penny. I agree that that was what
but
happened.
But what are we missing out on by not having them? So maybe that
yes,
should be...
Yes, that's where the focus needs to be, is what that opportunity cost has been.
Exactly.
But we need to take some message for you.
So anyway.
We'll work on it.
We can keep in touch with you on the dates.
Yeah, we will work. We will work as a board.
We supposedly have, it hasn't been locked in, but we supposedly have a work session with the Board of County Councilors. I'm hearing March, but it has not been solidified yet. That'd be a great time for our Parks Advisory folks to be there, as well as the main hearing when it comes up.
So we need to get those on our little calendar.
On the, taking the general fund parks and putting them in the district.
Yes.
Was there any sort of legal review on that?
Was there a legal review on that when it happened originally?
Yeah.
No.
Has there been one?
I don't. Well, I think there was. There was probably one. I think it flew through the PA's office, but the way that the levy was written, it didn't exclude that from happening. So it didn't say that we couldn't. The levy talks about the maintenance of 35 parks, but it didn't say only those 35 parks. So anything within the urban unincorporated area was fair game.
Right. Well, that's what the commission said. I would love it. What would be the proper way to get a legal opinion on that?
probably go through our PA's office, or typically anytime I go through MRSC to ask for anything, they say talk to your own PA's right. office, which is fine. That's what they're there for. And in fact, Amanda's right here in our audience with us tonight.
Hey,
she represents us as our PA. And so, have you been introduced properly?
Hi, last meeting. Yes.
Okay. But thank you for coming. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
So, I don't know if there's, John, to answer your question, I don't know if there's been any formal legal review on when that happened.
Can you request that of you, or how?
You can. I mean, traditionally, it's a little bit complicated because technically my client is
Bill. So if any request Bill to request of you.
Right. In theory. So.
Right.
I would like to move that we request Bill to check into the legality of the MPD, of putting general fund parks into the MPD.
I don't know that you necessarily need a motion to do that. You don't generally have to ask, if you're asking Bill a question of, is it legal, right? And Bill would turn around in theory saying, I don't know, I can ask the council. Mm-hmm. That's what is technically happening. So I don't know that takes board.
You're certainly welcome to make a motion to do that so that it's documented that you are asking as a board.
What do you guys think?
Couldn't record it in the meetings as an action item for Bill. That would work just as well in recording it.
Sure.
Mine takes the pressure off.
So your concern is because it's a certain type of money and they're using it for something else, you just want to know if they can use that type of money for what?
I think that's a question I know I've heard a lot too. And I'd like a real answer to it.
Okay, so it sounds like it's just a good question and we'll leave it in your
hands.
Well,
I'll take it as an action item and give it to Amanda.
Okay.
All right. So that's all I've got. Do you have any other questions? I've got a lot of other things on the plate, but it's stuff that I've brought up in the past. And as things happen, as we find out that we're getting these appraisals back in and that we're negotiating purchases of properties, I will definitely keep you all apprised of what's going on so that you're in the loop and can help me out. So that's the whole purpose here.
Good stuff. Yes.
So roundtable discussion, won't we? Start with Candace and move this way. Anything for the good of the order?
Okay. I'm good. Pass.
I went to the NAP meeting on Monday, which is your neighborhood association of Clark County. And you'll be glad to hear that they also are going to be sending a letter to the council in support of the reevaluation of the Pearson property. They would very much, the neighborhoods obviously have brought this message to us repeatedly. They're concerned about the surplusing of parklands. And so NAC is going to take a formal stand on that and be a little bit more assertive in protecting parklands. So they voted on that on Monday.
Sorry. Did you get any answer back on your letter or any answer back on your letter or anything?
I got a thank you. Which is really all I would expect to get. But I've been watching the grid, and there's nothing been there since other than thank you for the information on that other land out there, Bill.
Yes.
That did answer my question.
Did they discuss it at the board meeting or anything?
No, they have not. It's not shown up on the grid, at least. And I know that John and I are looking at having a meeting with the counselors just to see what type of relationship they would like to have as far as regular communication links. We don't want to leave this board in the lurch the way we did last year, where we had been, told we don't need regular meetings with you, and then later being told that we had fallen down on our job and not communicated well. So we're trying to get on their calendar now. It's very difficult. But that is one of the questions that we will at least informally ask them, is if they do plan on taking an action on that. Just would like to see the surplus list updated with that off of it. That's all I can.
Okay. So just to update you all on what Barb and I have been talking, obviously we've been talking about getting, you know, understanding where everybody's coming from and whatnot. As far as evolving the PAB, that was going to be the discussion earlier today on PAB direction and focus, but I think we can wait till the next time. But it's definitely, it's been my concern, and I think Barb's with me, that, you know, we spent all of our time last year trying to get the comp plan done. Now it's time to say, okay, we're real, and here's what we're really going to do and what we're about. And so that's where I think we'll be trying to talk next time. And definitely when you guys fill out your member survey, I'd like you to think about that. You know, what do you think this board should be all about? Also, should I add a note on this? Reiterating the relationship with the county counselors, that Barb and I are going to make an effort to get out there and meet with all of them and start having a little bit more of a presence. Not that we didn't last year, but keep working on that. And I think that's all I wanted to say. Actually, it was not just the county counselors, but also we have been talking about the concept that we are the regional service provider. We should be in more of a leadership position countywide with the cities and the other park commissions. So that's another thing that Barb and I were talking about, is trying to reach out to Camas, Washougal, Ridgefield, Vancouver a little bit more. So that's just stuff that's boiling in the background right now.
Yeah, can I interject on that, John?
Please.
The one thing that we want to do is to reach out and go to other parks advisory boards, and we've actually put a standing reservation with the city of Vancouver to go to theirs, and then also offer for them to come to ours. And so, and we should do that with all of our neighboring cities, just to get in touch, reach out to them, find out what they're doing in their silo, if you will, and then try to forge some partnerships in the future. I think by doing that, I think we're going to be very successful, you know, in our partnerships as we forge ahead. And I'm looking at, you know, not necessarily this grant cycle, but in the future grant cycle, and we're starting to think together as a unified group. That's when we start, you know, that's when the dividends pay off, you know, of having those strong relationships. So if you have some time and you want to go sit on, or go just sit in on other parks advisory boards, you know, to see how they operate, what's going on, I strongly encourage that. And we as staff are going to do the same thing. Thank you, John, for bringing that up.
And there are other organizations as well. Like, I go to NAC. I'm sure some of you are friends of Clark County. There's other trail groups and such. And that's a good time to start getting PAB's name out there as being their advocate and link back to the county council. You know? It's up to us to market ourselves and make parks more in people's face this year. In their face, Candace, right in their face.
In their face, things like asking for legal reviews.
I'm just kind of soaking it all in, but I think just looking around the room and what I'm learning about some of you, that we are connected in more ways than we know populations in Clark County, just by living here for so many years and knowing people. And I think maybe just give ourselves credit that we do have a positive impact just by being part of this. It's good to meet people, but we know lots of people too. So I think it's a good idea to connect with neighborhood associations. That's what I think of for neighborhood parks anyway. They're connected to schools because they have children and stuff like that. I mean, so I'm just soaking it all in.
That's good.
Something I wanted to add, I forgot to mention earlier. I know I had emailed to you all, most of you, the parks chapter of the comp plan update. We've changed the formatting a little to show track changes. It's the same content that you all approved, the same policies, the mission and vision. Would you like me to resend that to you with the new track changes?
You can always, when it gets loaded to the grid, send us the link. That makes it easier.
Yeah, it's not on the grid yet because we haven't, it's not going to Planning Commission yet. Yeah. When it goes to Planning Commission, it will definitely be on the grid.
Yeah. Just thinking to minimize your workload.
Okay.
As long as you don't change the verbiage, I'm good with the way it is.
Okay. How about when it goes to Planning Commission for work session, I'll let you all know.
Yeah, because you might want us to be there just face value.
Okay.
We're always there to support you, Lori.
All right. Thank you, Barb.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here today. That's all I have.
I don't really have anything. You'll notice I put on the calendar for next month the St. Patty's for Parks. That's actually on the day of our next Patty, so Tempe's not here to remind you.
Yeah, they came for that.
I'm hoping to go this year. It sounded like a lot of fun.
I always at least take the kids. Mm-hmm. If those of you who've got grandkids and stuff, such fun.
It was really fun.
And if you go to the evening one, be sure to paint your face green.
I don't think I can do that.
Oh, come on.
No, that's it.
I think I've spoken enough. There is one thing I forgot to mention to you is that we did put in for two grants with the Parks Foundation. One is for the Children's Garden at Philida Park.
There was three.
What's that?
You have three entries.
Three? I did two. What's the third one?
I'm not saying.
Okay. So the second one was for Rose Garden for the Rotary Club out at Orchards Park, and that's an expansion. Right now it's kind of set up as a horseshoe, and it's a big wide area, and they just want to put a little strip up the middle so they can add more roses and more plaques to commemorate all the people who have done wonderful things for Clark County.
I love that.
Yes. So they want to enhance that just a little bit more. That's the second one. And then the third one, it doesn't come ring the bell right away. So anyways, that's it for me.
Should have not said anything.
All right. Getting off here 5 minutes early. If anything, if I doesn't have anything.
Good job, John.
Thank you.
All the day news. Give us a
thanks.
I think it's